Well, it's time now to take a look at the week in federal politics. As Pauline Hanson visited the UK, One Nation dipped in the polls, while the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, laid out a new direction on artificial intelligence.
Pauline Hanson's popularity is continuing to decline, with the One Nation leader no longer the country's preferred Prime Minister.
The polls are an indicator that they're not a vote.
We've got absolutely no plan for a deal with One Nation to form government. I'm ruling it out. There's no plan.
Telstra has an awful lot of work to do here to make it up to its customers and to Australians.
I don't think any amount of hand-wringing, outage after outage after outage, is going to help anymore. We need proper rules.
We want AI to support and create good jobs, not replace them.
What he's announced is an office in an office, inside his own office. He's going to have another office. The answer to this is not more bureaucracy.
Australian writers, musicians, artists and journalists must retain ownership and control of their work. Anything less is theft.
One of the things that Labor is tearing itself up over at the moment is whether unions should have a right of veto over whether AI is adopted within private sector companies. Think about that.
I haven't had a day off all year, and this weekend I'll be in another remote part of the Northern Territory. GAMA isn't the only festival that's taken place.
That's the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, rounding out some of the sounds of the week in federal politics. Well, joining me to discuss our Friday political panel, Katina Curtis is the newly appointed senior political correspondent at Capital Brief. Katina, congratulations on the new job and welcome back.
Thanks, Sally. I'm 1 week in. It's going well.
That's good to hear. I'm also delighted to say that we've got with us for this Friday, Paul Kelly, editor-at-large at The Australian and author of a brand new book, the third in his trilogy. It's The Twilight of Exceptionalism, the Liberal and Conservative era. Paul, great to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be with you, Sally.
And Tom Crowley, Radio National Breakfast political correspondent, is here. Tom, welcome back to you.
Hello, Sally. I bought my copy of Paul's book yesterday. Very much looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, I'm looking
very
forward
pleased to hear that.
I'm looking forward to having a look at it as well. Paul, if I can start with you. We've been talking this morning and over the past few days about One Nation leader Pauline Hanson's trip to the UK. She's participated in a podcast with convicted criminal and far-right activist Tommy Robinson. That podcast has landed in the past few hours. How do you think all of this is going to play out in Australia and for One Nation's credibility?
I think it's going to play out badly. I mean, there's always been a touch of recklessness about Pauline Hanson, and over the course of the past 12 months, she's had pretty much a free go as far as the Australian media is concerned. But there's now a new degree of scrutiny on Hanson, and this is important, this is necessary, given that she's the front runner in the polls in terms of the major parties. I think that while she's been an effective populist, Hanson hasn't changed her spots. And this performance in this recent overseas trip is quite extraordinary. I mean, here she is cavorting with the convicted criminal, thug and racist Tommy Robinson in the UK. Then she's off to Sicily having a bit of a break with Gina Reinhart while lecturing the Australian people about cost of living pressures. I think what we're starting to see is the unravelling of One Nation. I think the One Nation vote will fall. How much it falls over the course of the next 12 months I think is difficult to say, but one's got to feel a little bit for Barnaby Joyce in this situation. Barnaby Joyce is trying to impose some policy coherence on One Nation, but it's not going all that well because this is a party that lacks policy coherence, and clearly Hanson in no way is fit to have any role as a minister in an Australian government, let alone being a prime minister.
Katina, how do you see it? I mean, some of the sound bites that we've heard this morning, many listeners will find those abhorrent. How do you see it?
Yeah, I was listening to those as I was driving in. Got just extraordinary comments, you know, saying all our problems started when White Australia policy was dumped. That's, I have no words really. I think that it is the case that now, particularly with the party soaring in the polls, that I think people who kind of were like, oh yeah, you know, well, I'm fed up with the, you know, what's happening at the moment. I'm feeling things are pretty tough. Maybe, you know, yeah, sure, I might vote for them. in 2 years' time. But I think that this sort of thing will actually, you know, now that it's kind of focused, that it is a real possibility, and that could get even further focused depending on what happens in the Victorian election, if that possibly does end up a minority coalition government, you know, with propped up with One Nation support. People will see that that is a thing that could be real, and then we'll start, you know, looking again at these sorts of comments and go, you know, that's really, you know, that's out of step with how I'm feeling, who my neighbours are, who the kids at my school are, or that sort of thing.
Tom, how do you see this changing the landscape politically? For those who have genuine economic grievances, they have frustration with the major parties, they have frustration with integrity issues around politicians as well. If One Nation's going too far for some of those people, where do those people put their votes?
I think that is an interesting question. I mean, in the UK, to the extent that that has happened a little with Nigel Farage, that anti-establishment vote has splintered. And of course, there has been a rising anti-establishment, anti-major party vote on essentially the right over the last couple of elections here in Australia. It's just gone all over the place. Some of it's gone to Clive Palmer and to various other minor parties that run on the right. So maybe in part that will happen. I think the key question for us to find out is what proportion of this primary vote indicative that Hanson's getting in these polls is ironed on support from people who are very focused on the issue of immigration and who, much like some of the supporters for Farage or Trump, may not mind a lot of this stuff very much, versus how many of them are simply disenchanted with the major parties and therefore might be called the soft Hanson voters, who can then be scared on a number of fronts. I think both Labor and the Coalition now have arguments that they can make about Hanson that go to their own identities with voters. Labor got plenty of things on scaling down the Department of Health or scaling back parental leave or workplace relations policies of Hanson that are very much bread and butter territory for them. Angus Taylor in the last couple of weeks has emphasised the uncosted One Nation policies and this idea that they're actually a big government party in disguise and risking a sovereign debt crisis in this speech at the Sydney Institute. Again, very comfortable territory for him. I think voters will then ultimately also, if they are interested in the issue of immigration, make up their own minds on whether they want that to come with this side of making direct and frankly quite insulting comments that we've heard in this podcast this morning about particular ethnic groups and in particular Muslim Australians. But there are now, I suppose, those three fronts to test what portion of Hanson support is soft.
Paul Kelly, has Angus Taylor adequately defined himself in this current situation? It was only a week or two ago that he was stumbling around multiculturalism and a monoculture. In the past couple of days, we've had him ruling out any sort of coalition with One Nation. Is it clear to voters where he stands in all of this?
I think Angus Taylor does have a cut-through communications problem. I think he's not sufficiently effective at getting his core message out. And there's no doubt that is a problem. But I think he's going to be assisted now by two important changes. One is the pressure that Hanson is now under and the fact that Hanson is increasingly going to be exposed in terms of her failure to devise an effective policy agenda for the country. The other advantage Taylor will have is what's going to happen to the economy. Because clearly we're heading into a very difficult 12 months with the economy. There are going to be structural problems with the economy, cost of living pressures, and enormous pressures on living standards. Taylor at the moment is devising a pretty radical economic policy agenda. His aim is to restore the economic and taxation credentials of the Liberal Party. And he's been mounting a campaign not just against the Albanese government, but very much against Pauline Hanson. Taylor's speech to the Sydney Institute a few days ago was an extraordinary attack on Pauline Hanson. He's not just distancing himself from Hanson. Basically, what he's saying is that Hanson's policies would lead to a financial crisis. It would lead to higher interest rates. It would lead to punishing the Australian community. And essentially, what he's saying is that Hanson's part of the problem. Hanson's not part of the answer. So accordingly, it was very unsurprising that he eventually ruled out governing in any coalition with Pauline Hanson after the election. Frankly, I think that Taylor should have been more straightforward about this. When he was interviewed by Sarah Ferguson the other night, he equivocated for quite a while before firmly ruling out a coalition with Hanson. I think he needs to say this over and over again, making it absolutely clear that the Liberal Party and the coalition will have no truck whatsoever in terms of dealing in government as part of a coalition with Pauline Hanson. Preferences are a separate issue.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast and our Friday political panel. Paul Kelly from The Australian, Katina Curtis from Capital Brief, and our own Tom Crowley. Katina, this week also artificial intelligence was a big issue. Two main pushes. One is to give some clarity to the industry on issues like copyright, but also management of these data centres, which are becoming a reality in many neighbourhoods. Did the PM succeed on those fronts?
Look, I think certainly on the copyright, this is the strongest that we've heard him come out. You know, he said that they want to have the strongest possible protections for copyright. As I think we heard in the package just before, you know, he was really saying if AI companies are scraping people's creative works, journalistic works without payment or agreement, that's theft. So that was really strong from him. So I think that put really put to bed any sort of lingering concerns around whether the government would lean in, give the tech companies what they wanted on this. On the data centres, look, they released these set of expectations back in May. It definitely sounds like those are going to be enshrined in law now. It was a little unclear to me whether the new AI Australian standards that the PM said will be legislated early next year will go further than just basically sort of planning and construction code issues for data centres. Is it going to include the copyright stuff? Is it going to include, for instance, safety guardrails? Like, is it just going to be kind of about the physical data centres, which obviously do more than just AI, or are there going to be broader standards around AI and protecting Australians and how that has to work? So that is still, to me, a bit unclear. And I think that is some of where we've seen Angus Taylor leaning into a bit of that uncertainty as well. But I really think, I mean, obviously, this is the first time we've heard the PM make big in-depth comments about his views on AI, and there's sort of been this bit of tension about do they be more interventionist or a more hands-off approach. He's leaning towards the interventionist thing. The timing of it was really important, obviously, just over a week out from Labor's conference, which is at the end of next week, where AI and what happens with AI is really shaping up as a bit of a fight with the unions. I think he's really trying to head that off. Now, I put that proposition to someone in government this week and they're like, oh, well, you know, our audience is broader than just the unions. But a week out from conference, you've got to think that's a fairly key audience.
We've only got a minute or two left. Paul Kelly, I must ask you, with the research for your new book, The Twilight of Exceptionalism, what's the main message that you took away from the members of the conservative side of politics that you interviewed for this latest book?
Well, the book argues very much that this was a disappointing period for Australia. This was a period of underperformance. I'm talking now about the Abbott Turnbull Morrison period, 2013 to 2022. I argue overall that this was a period when the sense of Australian exceptionalism, which we saw developed under Hawke, Keating, Howard and Costello, declined. And public policy became much more difficult to implement. Reform became more difficult still. One of the reasons for this was because the Liberal Party was pretty well chronically divided during this whole period. It wasn't just a conflict between Tony Abbott and Malcolm Turnbull. It was a conflict over core belief, policy and philosophy. And essentially what happened by the end of the 9 years, the electorate was pretty confused about what the Liberal Party stood for. It was uncertain about what were the Liberal Party's core beliefs. And while Scott Morrison was certainly unpopular when he lost the 2022 election, the problem wasn't just Scott Morrison. The problem was the electorate had lost trust and confidence in the Liberal Party. And of course, that then got worse over the subsequent 4 years. Hence the enormous challenge that Angus Taylor now faces to try and save the party.
Paul, it's been great to have you on our panel this morning. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Sally.
A big thank you to all our panellists this morning. Paul Kelly, Editor-at-Large at The Australian. His new book is called The Twilight of Exceptionalism, The Liberal and Conservative Era. In the studio with me here in Canberra, Katina Curtis, the newly appointed Senior Political Correspondent at Capital Brief. Katina, always good to have you here.
Thanks, Sal.
And our very own Tom Crowley. It's been another hectic week for you, Tom, Radio National Breakfast Political Correspondent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sally.